Welcome to Milkmaids Podcast, the unconventional homesteading podcast. I'm Stephanie from Wyoming.
And I'm Tara from Montana. Join us each week as we take a deep dive into an inclusive homesteading topic from canning, dairy animals, gardening, animal husbandry, and everything in between.
Hey, Tara.
Hey, Steph.
How's it going?
Good. We should let people know you're nursing a baby right now.
Super normal stuff.
It is. It's fine.
It's good. You know, he's going to be around, as it turns out.
Yep. He is. He's here to stay.
Just store him somewhere while I create free content for people. So
exactly.
You hear a baby, you hear a baby.
And I almost think that almost everyone who listens is going to be super excited to hear little baby noises, because little baby noises are the best.
He's pretty sweet.
Yeah, he is.
Pretty excited about him.
He's amazing. I love him.
Awesome. Well, speaking of badass women, who are we shouting out this week?
I am actually so excited for this shout out, mostly because it can be beneficial for almost all of our listeners.
And us.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which is really why we're here.
Right. Yeah. It's almost selfish because I think that I'm going to sign up for like the beginner course of this, which we'll get into. But this week, our shout out goes to Permaculture Women's Guild, also known as the International Hub for Women in Permaculture. So I have never heard of this guild before. And once I found it, I became pretty instantly hooked. Did you see the coloring pages, Steph?
Yes.
They're so cool.
Like, seriously?
I love to color. I'm all about these coloring pages.
So join for the coloring pages.
Right. Permaculture Women's Guild is all about making permaculture accessible to women so that they can create abundant human habitats that are sustainable while also protecting the regenerative aspect that has been lost when it comes to conventional farming. And this community was started in part by the author of Food Not Lawns, Heather Jo Flores. I always think about how they said the Fertile Crescent was so abundant.
Yeah.
Food, and then so much of that topsoil was lost, and now it's not so abundant. So what are the, I should have put this on here, but there are workups by scientists that say all of our topsoils that is being conventionally farmed right now is going to be gone by some number, like 2060 or something, right?
I wouldn't have the slightest of guesses at the actual number, but it doesn't surprise me that it has a shelf life, as it were.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's what we're coming to realize, that perhaps happened in the past where we started farming. It's like, shoot, maybe we should learn how to better take care of our earth.
Yeah.
So that's what permaculture is all about, while also providing food for us to eat, because we still got to eat, right?
Right.
So what really caught my eye is that they are offering a really in-depth course to beginners. And the best part is it's completely free. Here you will have access to multimedia and a forum in which to discuss permaculture and bounce ideas off of others in order to come up with your own permaculture designs. And this forum that they host is on Facebook, but also on their website. Like, you sign up with your email and you can do it through there, which is nice because it feels almost more intimate when you're off of Facebook. Like, Facebook has gotten so huge where it's like, okay, I'm talking to a whole bunch of strangers. Whereas it seems like they've provided something that's more down to earth and everyone is welcome. So you can go at your own pace, which for those of us living in the modern world is so valuable. Like, Steph and I have so many kids now that we have to chase and nurse and pick up from school. So I know this is a wonderful aspect to learning for those of us who have outside jobs or that cannot necessarily devote all their time to their studies. So they really emphasize that you do not need many acres to start this. You can do it from an urban or rural setting, and you can start in a rental. Perhaps you can even start it with like local businesses. The options are endless. If you can donate to their cause, that's great. But they absolutely do not expect it. And if you're wanting to look for a more advanced class, they also offer a completely free year-long course. So when I first started researching this, I saw the beginner course. And under it, I saw that they had a year-long course. Well, I looked at the beginner course first, and it was free. And I was like, oh, that's great. I bet the year-long one costs money, of course.
Exactly. That's how they do it.
Yeah. I looked into it, and the year-long one is also free.
That's amazing.
It's really incredible that they're putting all of this information and work out there for you, and they're just asking for a donation.
Yeah.
This year-long course offers 52 lessons that are recommended to be completed once a week. Their founder really makes it known that they work on a gift economy model and donations of all sides are always welcome. Their courses are offered on freepermaculture.com, and you can also check out permaculturewomen.com, where you will find a wealth of information. I thought of some of our listeners because they do have writing prompts too that are just a great push to be creative if that's something you're into. Like, writing creative prompts are so amazing for that.
And even if you think you're not into that, because I took a class doing that one time, because I'm not a writer at all. But, like, everybody's a writer. It feels real awkward at first.
Right.
Give it, like, three goes. And if you still think you suck at it after that, fine. But yeah. You don't have to think you're an amazing writer to be inspired by writing prompts.
Right. And maybe trying something new is great. And I like that most of them are nature-based. So you can really put yourself into kind of a different world if you want to. Totally. I think sometimes as women, we don't allow ourselves to be creative as much as we used to. I remember in high school, I would draw or do something with my time all the time that was creative. And once I had kids, I kind of just let that go. And I don't think that's fair. And I don't think that's a good example for my kids either. So I'm trying to reclaim a piece of that for myself.
Yeah.
So check them out. We will have those links in our show notes.
Awesome. Yeah, I'm super stoked. And my favorite thing is to blindside you with questions.
Good.
While we're recording. Excellent. As opposed to, like, beforehand.
Yeah.
We should do, like, a... not now, because who's got time at the moment?
You're literally nursing a baby. Let's do more things.
Well, he's trying to sleep right now. But what if, you know how we did the Preserve with Milkmaids challenge?
Yes.
That I refuse to give up. I still post.
Yes, you do. You're rocking it.
I refuse. We should, like, all of us do that 52-week course.
I think that's great. Yeah.
Like, maybe next fall or winter or something when things slow. Like, everybody do the beginner course now or whenever you want to.
Yeah.
We could all do it together. That'd be fun.
Yeah. And I think I do have a Facebook group started. Again, I was just saying, like, Facebook. But if we make it private, right?
Right.
And then I only allow people that listen to us in. Maybe it'll be a good way to where we can categorize our thoughts together and maybe sign up to do this together. It might be fun.
Might be fun.
Yeah. And again, if you have the money to donate, that's great. If not, don't stress about it. Like, permaculture is for everyone. Yeah, and that's totally the whole mission of their group. So
right. Sweet. Well, if you want to second this notion, if you want to jump on our bandwagon.
Oh, yes. You can tell you are in 4-H because you're like, do we have anyone to second this motion?
I'm going to write it in the minutes.
Yes.
Send us an email.
Just a Gmail.
Just any email. I do this all the time. Milkmaidspodcast@gmail.com. Leave us a review on any of the places. Shout us out.
Reviews.
Send us shout outs.
Yeah.
Whatever else I'm supposed to say. Milkmaids Podcast on Facebook or Instagram.
Do that. We have a lot of people reach out on Instagram. And I usually check those. I check those.
Steph does none of that. Me.
You do Facebook sometimes. Or if I direct you. Because there are certain questions that you can answer and I can answer. Like, I'm pretty good about pigs.
Yeah.
And then you know a lot about pigs too, but, like, it's more my area.
But people have specific questions, for each one of us that they don't necessarily know to direct it, but you and I know to direct it.
And you're a goat person for questions. Goats are great. If you have a question for specifically one of us, we'll find either one that's better at it than, like, say me. If you ask me a goat question, I'm sorry. I'll have to point you towards Stephanie.
Right. We got this.
So I wanted to do... a icebreaker.
First, hang on.
What?
It's not written in the outline, so I don't know why you're just skipping over it like this.
How dare you? I not read your mind.
Beep, 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 beep.
Oh,
You know?
Is this in the news? In the news. Okay.
Yeah. In the news. This is big time news, so get ready. There has been a hoopla of confusion over butter lately. So something happened on Twitter where a company said, this butter dish will fit both East Coast and West Coast butter. Do you have any idea what I'm talking about?
I absolutely do not. Are you on Twitter?
No, I don't.
Oh.
This came across, like, Facebook or TikTok or something. I don't know.
I'm not on Butter Talk.
I kept zero notes on this situation.
Okay.
Butter Talk?
I'm not on Butter Talk.
We should start Butter Talk.
Absolutely.
Apparently, East Coast and West Coast butters are shaped differently.
Aren't they all rectangles?
Well, yes, but the East Coast ones are long and slender, and those West Coast butters are chunky.
But and why? Shorter.
Yeah, I
like them
I'm
thick.
Telling you,
I like them thick. What about you,
then
Stephanie?
You're a West Coast butter kind of girl.
I am a West Coast butter kind of girl.
Right. This is something I really have nothing else to say about it other than now we know.
So what does the butter dish look like?
It's like long, it's thick and tall.
Oh.
Right? It's the big and tall.
It's the store. Big and tall for butter. Right?
So that you can have a tall, skinny one or a short, chunky one, and they both fit in the dish.
Wow. That's
for all of your like east and west of the Mississippi butter needs.
Yes.
Like it's a massive concern. Like every time I travel, I take my butter dish and the damn butter never fits in one of them 50% of the time. Like, what?
Wow. I
now
had no
we
idea.
Have one that suits all of your butter needs.
What do Canadian
no matter
butters,
your time zone.
But what about Canadian butters? Because you know that there's a certain part, I think it's near Quebec, that their milk comes in bags, milk bags. And you get a pitcher.
Yeah, I think it's most of Canada.
No, it's not.
Right?
No.
It's not?
It's just one section of Canada.
Oh.
Canadians, let us know. I must know. What does your butter look like?
The milk in the bag situation. The butter. Right. And who would have thought this was such a deal?
Do we Google Canadian butter?
That seems like a fairly safe Google of all the
it's
things that we've brought up to Google.
It's not density of rabbits.
No. Do not look up the density of rabbits.
Every time somebody mentions eating rabbits, that's all I think of is the density of rabbits.
Density. That's going to be a question to get into our Facebook group.
What's the density of rabbits?
Should you or should you not look up the density of rabbits?
Why is it so funny?
It's really not. We have too many children and we're delusional. Right.
Oh, good. Do you want to do farm updates first?
Oh, yeah. I still have no idea what's happening.
You could do kitchen updates.
Yeah, I've been doing a lot of fun stuff. So I made ginger beer.
Yeah, you did.
Which is cool. I made a ginger bug, which it's kind of ties into what we're talking about today, honestly. But a ginger bug, like I'm sure we'll do some sort of episode on just fermented drinks in general at some point. But it's a way you ferment ginger and create your own culture. And then from there, you can make all sorts of stuff, but ginger beer and root beer are one of them.
Okay.
That you can make.
No.
I've got to order some stuff to do root beer.
This was like a year ago. You were in deep on making root beer.
At one point, I watched like hours of YouTube about making
root
beer.
I'm not joking. Like that's everything to you at one point.
I never
in your
did
life.
Anything with that information.
No.
I just got on a rabbit hole and spent days.
You were like, do you know how to make root beer? I was like, no.
Like, well, it's not that hard, actually.
Why aren't
I could tell you everything about
beer?
It.
Yeah.
Huh?
You could make your own root beer floats.
Yeah. We make our own root beer floats, but with store-bought root beer, but we make ice cream. And that's been delightful. So that, if I can figure out this whole root beer situation, but I don't have all the stuff to do the root beer yet. So I did the ginger beer, which doesn't require but ginger and lemon juice. So
okay.
Anyways, it's 10 to 15 days in the second ferment. So I'll let you guys know.
I want to know. It looks really pretty.
It's gorgeous. And the ginger bug itself smells incredible.
I bet.
Yeah. So it's been fun. I like trying new things like that most of the time I try once and never do again.
Right.
But we'll see. We'll see. What else? I've been on a freeze-drying tirade.
Yeah, you've really gone at it. After you had that baby, you're like, all right, let's get to preserving.
Well, because here's the thing. I don't think everybody feels like this because I didn't necessarily the first time around. But this pregnancy, I was like drained. I was barely functioning. Mm-hmm. I'm curious to listen back to our episodes while I was pregnant when I'm not pregnant. You know what I mean? Like
in a different headspace.
Yeah. It was just like, I felt like I was just barely getting by on so many things. And so a lot of things just either got neglected or I just was comfortable setting aside for a while.
Yeah.
And then now I feel like I'm superhuman, insane amounts of energy, which is, I probably have like a normal human amount of energy.
Yeah.
But it feels so much different. So I'm still trying to balance that. Like my body's still healing and I've got to really, really keep that in check because my mind moves faster than my common sense most of the time.
Right.
So, but yeah, I've been freeze drying a lot. We cleaned up our food storage room, which really motivated me. And so happened to notice that our potatoes were not doing as hot as they've done in years past, which is probably just, we usually manage the humidity down there a little bit more carefully and we haven't this year at all. So anyhow, they're sprouting. They're really not going to last until the end of April when we can get to the ground again. So I decided just to put them up and order more seed potatoes. So I've been making hash browns in the freeze dryer, which it was fun. Like that involved research and experimentation.
I love freeze-dried hash browns. They're so good.
Hash browns.
Yeah.
And they rehydrate and cook up just like completely like normal.
Yeah.
I know you can freeze hash browns too, but try to get out of some freezers.
I don't like
that. Yeah, they kind of get mushy.
Yeah.
And then I made, this is going to hit a very small portion of our audience, yogurt melts.
They're really pretty too.
They're gorgeous. So they're these little yogurt drops that are freeze-dried that are like a fantastic option for children who are just getting started on
foods. Yeah, because they melt in their mouth.
Yeah, they're fantastic. And by children, I mean like I've already eaten like a half pint of them.
No, they're a good food to just grab.
They're a really good snack for, awesome for kids without teeth, and then just as a snack for everybody who has teeth.
or dentures, who's to say?
That's how you outline this.
Yeah.
With or without teeth, you will enjoy. I should be in marketing.
Don't have teeth? No problem. Yogurt melts, got you covered.
Oh my gosh. And then my kid has been like going, the older kid has been going through so much yogurt. So I've just been making yogurt like a crazy person.
Right.
But I finally have it dialed in. So I've been enjoying that. And then, yeah, so speaking of this freezer situation, right, we cleaned up the food storage room. And then we've got like 1, 2, 3, 4 freezers, not including like the one above the fridge in the kitchen. None of them are like efficiently stocked whatsoever. No. Right. One doesn't have a lot in it. The other one's like has so much in it, you can't tell what's in there.
Yeah, yeah. Normal things.
And so, I've been going through those. And just between the two of these things, the canned foods and the freeze-dried foods and the freezers, realizing we have so much flipping food that we're just not utilizing efficiently.
Yeah.
Because we forget it's there, or it's one of those things. I know this is like partial. Partially, this happens to everybody. The other part is this is like a very ADHD thing. If it's not front and center visual,
yeah,
it's like I can't, right. I can't deal.
That's why like cleaning your room and putting it in the closet is excellent if you're ADHD, because it doesn't exist anymore.
Gone. Right.
Problem solved.
It's one of those things where, so through all of this, I have set myself a personal goal for February. We'll keep you posted on how this goes. But I go to the store once a week, right? The grocery store. And I spend a shit ton of money on groceries. And it's only getting worse, let me tell you.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't really shop that selectively because I'm very fortunate, right? Like I'm fortunate to be stupid with money in the grocery store.
Yeah.
So, but we've got all this food that's not getting used. So my new goal is I'm going to spend $30 a week on groceries in February.
Oh, that's badass.
That's it. And if it were just Brian and I, I'd probably do like $0 a week.
Yeah.
But I like... my kid loves bananas and stuff, you know what I mean? So anyways, we're going to still stick on that, you know, get fresh. Did you hear that?
Yeah.
Get fresh things for her to keep her going on that. But that's my goal. So anyways, I've just been kind of digging, rummaging around through things and doing meal plans. And
oh, that's badass.
I'm really excited about it. It's like, you know me, I won't do it if it's not a competition.
Yeah, so you have to have a competition.
Goals, right? Yeah, I have no idea what's going on my farm. That's every single tiny detail of my household.
Yes,
I like it. How's it going? How's your pigs?
So Matilda's due like today or tomorrow, and she built her nest today. So I'm just watching her. Like I'll just go check on her every couple of hours, but I don't want to disturb her and get her up because she likes to just lay down, and you want them to kind of lay down too when they have piglets, especially since it's so cold. I guess it's not too bad. It's like 30 degrees today. So
yeah, it's nice here today too.
Not too bad, but like the wind is not great. Not awesome. So I just want her to lay down. I did make a bunch of butter. My butter is actually shaped like a blob because I put it in. I have square glasses.
What kind of dish do you have?
I have square ones. They're
They're
glass that has like a plastic top, but I don't have any Tupperware because I'm a hippie. So I have everything as glass.
Yeah.
And then, so it goes in a glass one, and then I put it in the freezer with like the date on the top of the lid. So mine is shaped like a blob. Seriously, if I can fit it in there, it goes in there. It's perfect.
Right.
So I got a lot of butter done, and then I'm dumping a lot of milk to the pigs because when I skim it off, I just don't have any need for it anymore.
Yeah.
Which is fine. And everyone else is good. That's about all that's happening here, except for I don't know why it took us this long. We've been farming for, I don't know, several years now, 7-ish years, something like that. And I always thought that I had to do all the finances for it. So it simply just did not happen.
Right.
And then I'm doing finances for my other business. And then Doug's like, oh, our accountant was talking to us that we should do a Schedule F for our taxes. Right. And then I was like, why don't you do it? Because he's actually good at that stuff. And he was like, yeah, I could do it. I'm like, it seriously took me 7 years to figure this out. Like, why was I putting it on myself to have to do it?
Yeah. No, I get it.
He could be doing it.
Because that's what we do.
Right. I wouldn't let him have any control over anything. Not because I'm a control freak, just because I simply thought I had to do it all. And that's not at all what had to happen. I don't know why it took me this long to figure it out. So he's going to do it. I told him to research, like, do you want a book or do you want to use Wave, because I've been using, it's a free platform just like what you use, QuickBooks, right?
Yeah.
But it's free, so I can just categorize everything through that.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah, and it's free. It's the best part because I'm not spending as much as you are on QuickBooks.
Yeah, no, I spend money on QuickBooks.
Yeah, I'm done with it. I do not make that much to justify it. So Doug's going to take over the farm finances, which is like such a relief for me. I don't even have to worry about it now. But that's about it. That's everything that's going on here.
Yeah, no, I think that's awesome. And like, it is like you were saying, it's if he's good at it, you guys have to, and not you, that was really attacking. You guys need to get it together.
Yeah, we do.
I really mean like any farm couple or any farm partner or any farm employees, whatever. It's about probably just business in general. It doesn't really have to be farming. Playing to everybody's strengths, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It'll work out really well.
But sometimes it's easy to look over that.
Yeah. He kind of does that at his job now. Like, he has to manage a budget really well.
Yeah.
So I'm like, this flows easily. Like, why aren't you doing it? I'm not going to do two of them. I already hate doing the one. So you're going to do the other one. He's like, okay, yeah, that's fine. Okay. We could have done this years ago.
Cool.
Well, we got there. So what are we talking about today?
We are going to talk about kombucha today, which is kind of a fun topic. A lot of people have covered this, but in terms of our winter kitchen talk, right? We never really coined it, but this is what people do in the winter when we're homesteaders. So here's an option of something to learn and try, and it's not that hard, and we're going to go through it.
Well, the thing is, like, with everything, we approach it so differently than other podcasts. Nothing against them, but we just do it in a different way. So maybe you'll learn something, maybe not. Who's to say?
Right. Who's to say? We really sold that.
I know.
What's wrong with us?
I'm such a Leo. I'm like, fine. If you don't want to listen, don't. Right.
All right. So nice edit here, Tara. Steph grabbed a bunch of books from the library.
I did not.
This is the thing that I was doing while I was like anxiously awaiting the arrival of my child, was ordering books at the library.
Yes.
Anyways, I got three of them that I really like and want to send your guys' way if you're interested, because you know how we are about books. So The Big Book of Kombucha by Hannah Crum and Alex Liguori. This is the ultimate beginner's guide, but it's also really in-depth. So it's only kombucha. It's a big-ass book. It has in-depth on the hows and the whys, along with photo guides for things like molds and troubleshooting, which anytime you're working with a culture, photo guides are life.
They're so helpful.
Because people say things like mold is good or bad. And you're like, okay, well, which is it?
Which is it?
I'll flip to my photo guide and identify my mold and then figure it out, you know? So anyhow, I'm all about that. The book is strictly kombucha. So if that's all you're interested in, it's fantastic. The next one is Kombucha Kefir and the next one. See, I just called it what you call it, which is hysterical because I say it wrong as well. Kefir.
Is it kefir?
Because I used to say it kefir. You say it kefir.
Tomato, but tomato.
It's really kefir.
It's kefir.
Wow. Kombucha, Kefir, and Beyond. By Alex Lewin and Raquel Guajardo.
What is Beyond?
And Beyond. It's outer space, Tara.
And Beyond.
What's Beyond? She said it like Buzz Lightyear. Kefir. What is Beyond Kefir? I thought that was the edge of fermentation.
I'm just so curious.
It's actually a fantastic book. This is the one
because
that I got.
Beyond.
Right. You know what is Beyond? A ginger bug and ginger beer.
Oh,
Tara.
Is this where you got the recipe for?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. So this is what I've been up to. Anyways, as the book suggests, it includes more than just kombucha and Beyond. Because it's more inclusive on multiple fermented drinks, so it doesn't go into nearly as much detail about kombucha in particular, But it does have everything you need to know in there. So if you're not like, if you don't want to nerd out, you just want to get the basics and go, it's a great book for that. And then if you say you know how to do kombucha and want to expand on your fermented drinks, it's got literally everything. Like there's a fermented yogurt, sparkling yogurt type of a drink in there.
Oh, yeah.
Which sounds insane, but I want to try it anyways.
Right.
Because I'm like the yogurt queen at the moment.
Yeah.
Anyways, it's a really cool book. There's a lot of fermented drinks from around the world that you've never heard of before. So, Kombucha Revolution.
Who names these books? I was waiting for your giggles. It's a revolution of kombucha.
Right. By Stephen Lee with Ken Koopman. This book has the least available on like the how and the why of the kombucha. And it really is for people who do have the hang of kombucha and want to go like the step further, because the bulk of the book is all about like different flavoring recipes. And then also like what else you can use kombucha for besides just drinking kombucha, like smoothies, cocktails, kombucha coleslaw.
I can't.
All of the essentials.
Absolutely not.
Do you like coleslaw?
I don't like coleslaw.
I don't either.
Who likes people coleslaw? People either
love coleslaw. Really? I get made fun of all the time for not liking coleslaw. Maybe it's a regional thing.
Maybe it is a regional thing. There's sugar involved on cabbage and like mayonnaise.
That's the thing I think that gets me is the mayonnaise on the cabbage.
It's so good without it. Right? The cabbage didn't consent to this. No. Nobody asked the cabbage's opinion if it should have mayonnaise on it.
We've alienated 85% of our listeners.
I'm sorry. I still love you if you like coleslaw. I'm just not a fan of it.
I'm not a fan of coleslaw either. Ugh. But people make fun of me for that.
I just didn't know there was kombucha coleslaw.
Oh no, neither did I.
Okay, well now we know.
That came from a very specific region of the United States.
Right.
I had to.
Right, it had to. I want to know where, but.
So those three books, check them out. As we do this episode, it's going to be mainly a 101 course that is what we do, right? And for those people who have never made kombucha, some people may have never even heard of it. Or if you just want to see how we do it, because kombucha is one of those things. It can be done multiple ways. So, yeah.
So what is kombucha? Kombucha essentially is just a fermented tea. So we did do a two-part episode on fermenting back in September of 2021. And if you'd like to go back and learn more on how fermenting actually works, go ahead and check it out. We did a full deep dive into the history of fermenting too. So a lot of that's covered with kombucha as well. And the big point that we like to reiterate here is that fermented foods offer a lot of potential health benefits. There are many claims made, and you're welcome to research them. Essentially, if you subscribe to gut health being center of overall health, fermented foods contribute to the good bugs in our gut. And back to kombucha, though, and the actual fermentation of tea, and how does it work? The quick and dirty is a SCOBY. Do you call it a SCOBY or a SCOBY? Yeah. Or?
I call it a SCOBY.
I call it a SCOBY as well.
Okay, some people call it a Scooby, but there's one O, so...
I know, it's not Scooby-Doo.
No.
There's no mystery machines involved.
Unfortunately.
Right. I subscribe to Scoobies having two O's, but let us know what you think. It's symbiotic culture of bacteria and yeast, and it's combined with a starter liquid. And you feed them fresh tea and let them sit for 5 to 10 days. After that time, you can add bubbles and flavors by rebottling and letting the brew sit for several more days. I was obsessed with kombucha when I was pregnant. It was like my favorite drink. Yeah. That's the only time I really loved it was when I was pregnant.
That's so funny.
Yeah. I think that...
The first or the second time?
The second time. Yeah.
Oh, interesting.
I think that my body just needed it. So it's one of those things. And we will get into that in more detail one at a time.
So what is a SCOBY even? People get really intimidated by kombucha because of the SCOBY thing, because they're weird.
They look like raw chicken, really.
Yeah, like dirty raw chicken, maybe.
It's a good way to describe it.
There's a myth out there that these are mushrooms. I don't know where that came from or why. It's not a mushroom. SCOBY, S-C-O-B-Y, is an acronym for symbiotic culture of bacteria and yeast. And that's all these things are, is bacteria and yeast. If you haven't seen one before, they're super creepy. Right, I wrote out this description. The dirty raw chicken is much better. They're super slimy, sort of rubbery?
Rubberly feeling.
Rubberly feeling.
It's a word, look it up.
And I love when anything is described as flesh colored because it makes my stomach turn, but that's exactly what they are. They're flesh colored discs. They also have a bunch of brown stringy stuff on them.
Oh, God. You're making it sound so delightful to make this.
I know. This whole episode, I'm like, You should make kombucha. It's disgusting.
It's disgusting. Give it to me now.
Right. It really is so good, you guys. Right. Yeah. Really selling this. So the SCOBY is actually the coolest part for us nerds, though, because in science terms, the SCOBY is a zooglial mat tied together by cellulose and nanofibers. And the main bacteria is called, here we go. Did you really look it up?
I did.
Okay, I'm going to say it. Tara looked it up, which is funny because it's not even her outline, but she was so paranoid about having to say it. I did not look it up. Comatogaibacter xylinum.
Yeah, close.
Close?
Yeah.
You go.
Comatogaibacter xylinum.
It's that middle section with like 17 vowels strung together.
It's seriously that gets like you, a you know? 12-letter word.
Right. Anyhow.
It's responsible for something, though.
It is responsible for building cellulose.
Yes.
Which is what gives the, as opposed to just being particulates, the cellulose is what gives it the rubber feel to it.
Yeah.
So there's several different types of bacteria and yeast that go into a SCOBY. It's not just that one, but a lot of them all kind of work together. And the word symbiotic tells us that the bacteria and the yeast work together and they need each other to live. So like, again, I really want to do more on this, but basically the byproducts of yeast fermentation feed the bacteria and the byproducts of bacteria fermentation feed the yeast.
Yeah.
So they have to have each other. And like we could do a whole episode on the chemical reactions and physical manipulations performed inside of a SCOBY, around a SCOBY. I think there'd probably be two people that would find that interesting.
Us.
Us. Right? But it is all in that big book of kombucha. So if you want to nerd out with us, dig in because it's pretty cool.
Yeah.
But that's really all you need to know. And you probably don't even need to know that much.
So how to source a SCOBY and what to look for. This is the funnest part to me, honestly. You can find SCOBYs online at numerous places. Lots of places sell it. Cultures for Health, I believe, carries one. And the best and easiest way is to source one locally just so you can see it and know what you're getting. And this is a great way to make friends too, right?
Right.
Usually if you have kids that are homeschooling or whatever, you can ask the homeschool group, like any crunchy person that you talk to has one going at any moment. It's true.
If they're wearing Birkenstocks, it's a safe bet.
Approach them about kombucha starters. The cool thing about SCOBYs is that they reproduce themselves. And with each batch, they grow new layers of SCOBY that you can peel off and share with others or start new batches. The peeling off of them really freaks me out.
Does it really?
Yeah, it's like, I don't know. Makes a flesh weird colored. Sound. It's flesh colored.
Yeah.
With that being said, anyone who brews kombucha will have excess SCOBYs to share. Most people are happy just to gift it to you. And I have this too. I see people on our local Facebook pages sharing them all the time for free. And so maybe start there if you don't know anyone personally. And whenever you're looking for a SCOBY, you want to avoid a dehydrated one or anything that has been refrigerated or frozen. And ideally, you will be getting one from an active batch of kombucha. Also, be sure to get a starter liquid with your SCOBY, at least 1 cup. And starter liquid is simply brewed kombucha. This sustains the SCOBY between batches as well as kickstarts the next brew with a healthy dose of bacteria and yeast.
So you have your SCOBY and your starter now. Now you need some tea and some sugar. So tea can really be a lot of varieties, but true tea actually comes from a single plant, which is really cool. It's important to note that teas made with herbs are not actually tea. Those are actually called infusions. So like a chamomile or a peppermint tea, right? Those aren't actually tea. They're infusions.
Okay.
So we avoid infusions with kombucha. It's not impossible to work with them to some degree, but the SCOBY needs tea, right? So they just require a little bit more knowledge to incorporate into kombucha. Maybe we'll get to that in a more advanced episode.
Okay.
But Camellia sinensis is a small shrub or bush, depending on the variety, environment it's grown in, and the method in which the leaves are processed. All of that determines what type of tea you have from that single bush.
Which is fascinating. There's people in there that are out there that dedicate their whole lives to tea.
I dedicated hours to it the other day.
Yeah. To get this done.
Seriously. So I so badly want to do a 30-minute tangent on how all these teas are processed and made, but can't. So I did include the YouTube link that I started on my rabbit hole with. Also, Stuff You Should Know podcast did an entire episode on tea.
Oh, that sounds fascinating.
Yeah, I've included the link there too because it's really cool. Anyhow, each tea has specifics that contribute to taste or specific health benefits that you might be looking for. We're not going to go into detail on the health benefit side of things. We aren't doctors. We aren't trained herbalists. I haven't looked up the legalities of making medical claims. So
for tea or for kombucha. For tea.
Right. So you know what? If you're going at this from a health perspective, look them up. So black tea, it's the most available. It's usually super cheap and it's the most common form of tea used with kombucha brewing. It does give a nice strong flavor, but it also has caffeine.
It does.
Some people are concerned about that. Green tea is probably the second most common type of tea used in kombucha specifically. It is readily available like black tea. It tends to produce a more gentle flavor that's still delicious. It does have caffeine, but not nearly as much as black tea does. White tea. So this tea produces a more mild tasting kombucha.
There's a baby.
I'll try picking him up. It's harder to find white tea is typically, and it's also tends to be more expensive. Oolong tea, it's kind of the middle of the road tea, honestly. It has a mild kind of medium flavor to it and like a medium level of caffeine as well. The way it's processed, it's actually said to have a lot of health benefits from both black and green tea. So if you're wanting both of those, oolong might be a good way for you to go, other than like our store doesn't sell white or oolong tea. So nice. Most people's stores probably do, yeah. I would say. But one quick note on caffeine, though. We get asked about caffeine content a lot when it comes to kombucha because people are concerned about tea. A lot of times people are trying to use kombucha as an alternative to coffee or things like that. When you're talking tea, you're not using a lot of tea in kombucha. It's kind of a diluted amount of tea. And secondly, a lot of the caffeine's broken down in the fermentation process. So unless you're highly sensitive to caffeine, it's probably not a huge concern.
No matter what type of tea you choose to brew in, you want to start with whatever tea your SCOBY is accustomed to. If you know you want to brew oolong tea and are also shopping online for a SCOBY, you can be specific that is used to oolong right off the bat. But for those snagging a SCOBY from a friend, be sure to ask what type of tea it's been fed. And remember that SCOBYs are alive and need to be transitioned, much like the gut of a ruminating animal or like a fish to a tank. You want to acclimate them. So if your SCOBY has been fed black tea, but you really want a green tea brew, transition it over by adjusting your tea ratios. Start with 80% black tea and 20% green tea. On the next batch, increase your green tea and lessen the black tea. It won't take but a couple of batches and your SCOBY will be adjusted, which is so cool that it works like that.
Yeah, totally.
So we need to talk about sugar too. Despite the bad name that sugar gets, it's critical to the fermentation process in kombucha. When you make the sweet tea, you will be disgusted by how much sugar is in there, but know that the fermentation process breaks down and consumes most of it. So really, by the time that you are drinking your fresh brew, it has little sugar left in it. It's more for your SCOBY than you.
Yeah.
And there's like a ton of nerdy science here that, again, we'd love to talk about, but we'll keep it simple for this episode. Essentially, the fermentation process is transforming the sugar from disaccharides to monosaccharides, which are easier on the body. All of this is to say, like caffeine content, unless you are highly sensitive to sugar, don't worry too much about the sugar content of kombucha. There are many types of sugars you can use. Each will contribute a different flavor profile. So plain white sugar, obviously this is super easy to find. Every grocery store or gas station has it, and you can access it at a low cost. The yeast has a super easy time breaking down the sugar. For some people, the highly refined the highly refined nature of white sugar can be concerning. Less refined cane sugars like brown sugar, succinate, turmentado. I've never heard these terms before, but people like these sugars because they are less refined. They will contribute to a darker brew with deeper flavors. However, you have to be careful. The varied mineral content in these sugars may affect your brew negatively. So if you have that happen, know to try again and adjust your sugar. So pasteurized honey. This produces an amazing flavor. About 80% of honey is already broken down into monosaccharides. So this makes quick work for the yeast, which means a shorter brew time. But note here, though, only use pasteurized honey. If you use raw honey, the bacteria in the honey will compete with a SCOBY and give you a funky brew at best. And it's kind of like yogurt. Like, it just can't set up. If you're using raw milk, you have to pasteurize it.
Yeah, focus on helping one bacteria.
Yeah, we all love the bacteria, but you got to choose one.
Right, right.
So maple syrup, again, this can provide a super unique flavor. Maple syrup is highly concentrated, so you will use less of it than sugar. If your recipe calls for 1 cup of sugar, use about half a cup of maple syrup. Maple syrup usually has a high mineral content as well, so depending on the exact content of your syrup, you may have some different flavors going on. Only use pure maple syrup, that garbage from the grocery store, designed to ruin pancakes is a no-go. So get it from
not even syrup.
Passamaquoddy maple, and be sure to keep it in the fridge.
Right. All the things that we've learned.
We've learned things
so
this year.
Far.
Yes.
Right. So water, well water, spring water, bottled water, all of those should be fine to use. If you have city water, though, oftentimes it contains chlorine, which is there to kill bacteria.
Which
right?
is so good. It's like good for city water. Like you need that. But it's not good for a SCOBY.
Not for SCOBY. No. It's going to do the exact same thing and kill that. So to get rid of chlorine, it is simpler than you would think. Just let the water sit out for like 24 hours.
Right.
Chlorine's a gas. It evaporates off. If you're in a pinch, you can boil it for 15 minutes too, because again, it's just going to get that gas out of there.
Right.
So here's our unsolicited
advice.
I was
just telling you about unsolicited advice and how good I am at giving it.
It's really all we do. So we just covered a lot of detail and choices there, which can be wildly overwhelming if you're like us and want to know all of the things at once. So our advice to you is the same as always. Start with the exact method that someone else is doing successfully, and then customize things after you have that part down. Start simple and then adjust. The same thing we say about pigs, the same thing we say about chickens.
Yeah.
It applies here. 9 times out of 10, your SCOBY is going to be fed black tea. It's just very common.
So it's so start easy there. To get at the store too.
Yeah, exactly. Start there. Use white table sugar and a good source of water. Done. Decisions have been made for you. And then go forth, right? You can do adjustments after that. So on to the actual how in the hell we actually do this thing, which is our MO to usually do this in a part two, but here it comes. You are going to need a glass jar, 1 gallon size. You can use other things, just don't use metal unless it's stainless steel, but a glass 1 gallon jar is the best. You're gonna need a cover, which is gonna be like a cloth, a paper towel, coffee filter, something like that. Basically, you need air to be exchanged and fruit flies not to get in. So whatever you can pull off there, a rubber band or a tie of some sorts to secure that to the top of your jar, a pot for your stove, a long-handled spoon, again, wooden or plastic's best. Try to avoid metal if you can, a funnel, and some capped bottles, which we'll talk about capped bottles in a little bit. So how you actually brew kombucha is you're going to need 4 to 6 tea bags, 1 cup of sugar, 1 SCOBY, and 1 to 2 cups of starter liquid. And this is for a 1 gallon brew. So start by brewing your sweet tea concentrate, and you're going to heat like 2-ish cups of water to a boil and remove that from the heat. Steep your tea bags in there for at least 10 minutes. Remove the tea bags, squish them all out to get all the liquid out.
Do you then do that for your regular tea too?
Yes.
Squish your bag.
That's where all the good stuff is.
That's where all the good stuff is. Some people don't.
Yeah.
I have to.
Really?
Yeah.
Weird. They probably like coleslaw too.
They do like coleslaw.
Yeah. So you're going to add, after you've got the tea bag squished and liquid out, you're going to add the sugar and stir that until it's dissolved. Then pour the concentrate into your gallon jar. Now you're going to top off the jar with cool water, remembering to leave the room for the starter liquid and SCOBY. Stir all of that together. Stir the concentrate with the cool water. And before you add anything else, before you add anything else, check the temp. You want to make sure that it's like room temp-ish. You don't want it boiling. You don't want it cold. Anything that you don't want to shock the SCOBY.
It's kind of like yeast.
Exactly. Yeah. So just try and keep it like, if you can do it room temperature or whatever temperature your SCOBY's currently at, that's great. Don't get hung up on that. Stick your finger in both, make a decision. You don't need to get a thermometer out to do that.
Unless
part.
You have your, pointing thermometer, your laser thermometer, and you just want to know. That's something we would do.
You've had so many unique names for that thing through this past year.
I can't. What is it? What's it really called?
It's an infrared thermometer.
I can't remember.
You've had some good ones.
I should just name
my
it.
God.
Jeffrey.
Right. Jeffrey.
The thermometer.
So now that you have your tea made, you're going to need to add your starter liquid and your SCOBY. You can give that a stir if you want. It's going to incorporate itself pretty well. So cap the jar with your cloth and rubber bands or whatever you rigged up there, and let that ferment somewhere dark and moderately warm for 5 to 21 days-ish in length. That's going to depend wildly on the specific environment and SCOBY strength that you have. So at 5 days, you're going to want to taste it. So make sure that your utensil's clean. A straw dipped and capped makes a perfect sampling device.
Especially if you have a stainless steel straw. They're so easy to clean.
Yeah, everybody should have stainless steel straws. I love mine. Yeah, channel your inner child and straw and cap and baby bird it into your mouth. Yeah. basically, you're just looking for a flavor that you like at this point. So the longer this brew is allowed to ferment, the tangier it's going to be. If you like a sweeter drink, you'll end the process sooner. So it takes a little perfecting to get your exact preferences nailed down. And your preferences are probably going to change the more you drink kombucha as well. If it's too sweet still, let it ferment a little longer. If it tastes like vinegar, you've gone too long. Make a note and start again. If it does taste like vinegar, you can use it as vinegar. Any way you would use vinegar, you can use it there too. So just if you accidentally went too long on it, you can use it other ways too. Tara and I like to do second ferments, which give it the bubbles. So we'll pull it while it's still a touch too sweet for us. That way the second ferment has some sugar to work with still. You'll just kind of get that dialed in. So that's just going to take a little bit of effort. I find that it helps to take notes on those kind of things when you're starting this until you get it committed to memory and have it down by feel. So once you've decided that taste is perfect, the first fermentation is done. And now you have a couple choices. So if you don't like carbonation at all and you just want it to be more like a juice or a tea, you can bottle it now and refrigerate it to enjoy drinking whenever. If you don't like carbonation, you can also flavor it with anything you want to at this point before you put it in the fridge if you want. Remember that refrigeration halts fermentation. So it's going to leave the drink almost exactly how it tasted when you put it in there. If that's how you prefer it, great. Remember that you want to save your SCOBY and at least 1 to 2 cups of starter liquid set aside somewhere, not in the fridge, so that you can brew your next batch of kombucha.
A lot of people just have a special part. It used to be like a thing where you put all of your saved back things in a special place.
A SCOBY hotel. That's at the end of this presentation.
Okay.
If you'll hold your questions till the end,
sorry.
Please.
Very impatient.
That's slide number 73. If you do like carbonation, you'll want to do a second ferment on that. And then a quick note before we move on. If a gallon seems like a lot to you or you don't have a vessel that big, you can really make kombucha in any amount. There's a great chart in the Big Book of Kombucha. There's also charts online that will help you with adjusting the recipe down to whatever vessel you're doing. The smaller the vessel, the quicker the brew time. Yeah,
that's essentially what it is.
Yep. So the SCOBY doesn't have to process nearly as much. So another quick note. I keep adding these to the end. We just went over what's called a batch brew method, and that's where you're brewing one batch at a time, start to finish. There is a method called a continuous brew method, and it's as it sounds, continuous. It's just done a little differently. This is more suited for slightly more advanced brewers. It does not take a college education to pull it off. If you start at batch, it helps you get the foundation, and then you can move on to continuous.
Yeah, and so the first thing I saw was a continuous. So I thought that's all the only way you could do it. So that's how I actually started. I didn't have any problems. So like you can figure it out if you are absolutely dead set on it. But the batch one is a little bit easier.
It is. It's a little bit less to think about. But the continuous brew is fine. This episode's already running on the longer side. So we just had to break it down somewhere. So anyways, we'll cover it at some point. But if you want to cover it yourself before we get around to it.
Start a podcast and put it out there because we refuse.
You cover it. Well, I know that sounds so snotty. Like you do the research then.
No, you don't.
But really, I was just telling you when we were chatting before we started recording that sometimes you don't know what.
Babies.
Sometimes you don't know what to Google.
Yeah.
Right. And so that's all I'm saying there.
Yeah.
Now you know something to Google. It does sound super snotty.
So the second fermentation, this is the fun part of most kombucha brewers. This is a step where we can add both flavors and carbonation, which gives us the kombucha we are used to. Like, I love the blueberry flavored one, personally.
Blueberry is one of our favorites. And then the one that was the biggest surprise for us is pear.
Oh, yeah. I love a pear flavor anything, though.
It's like perfect summer, just gentle flavor.
Yes. Yeah. That's a good way to describe it.
Yeah.
Once your first ferment is to your liking flavor-wise, you will rebottle it into smaller bottles that have the ability to build pressure. Ideally, these are cap-top bottles that you can reuse again and again, and they're really pretty.
Yeah.
You can find them online or at any home brewing store. Sometimes you can find them in the secondhand store. They're just one of those things that every grandpappy had, right?
Right.
And you can use other things, though, like mason jars or beer bottles if you have the capping equipment. And you really just need a vessel that can be sealed to allow pressure to build. For flavoring, the sky is the limit. Fruits, like we said, are a great place for people to start, but spices and seasonings are fantastic, too. How cool would it be to, like, make a Christmassy spiced one?
No, they're good.
Yeah.
Like a cinnamon, ginger, allspice.
The best. You can really make any flavor that you want. If you're stuck or the type to like a guide, there are many books out there with amazing flavor recipes and combinations that can inspire you. So in terms of being specific in our help, let's make strawberry kombucha, for example. You want to get your bottles clean and a clean funnel, and you're going to chop up a handful of strawberries. You don't need a lot to do this. They just need to be chopped such in a way that they can fit down inside of the bottle. So when you're chopping, just make sure that they can get down in the neck and everything like that.
And yeah, consider how they'll come back out of the neck. Yeah. So if you have to like pry them down in there, you're going to have to shake like crazy.
Yeah.
To
get them. It's a pain.
Shake like Taylor to get them off.
Shake it off. Okay. Add 1 to 2 tablespoons or so of chopped strawberries to each bottle. And before you get carried away, make sure you set aside your SCOBY and 1 to 2 cups of starter liquid for your next batch, so you're just not out of luck there.
Right.
And now pour the remaining brew into the bottles, and you don't need to leave too much headspace. Less headspace equals more and quicker carbonation, though, so be aware. If you're getting bubbles from pouring, you did a great job on your first ferment. Congratulations. You're going to cap the bottles and allow them to sit at room temperature in a dark place for 1 to 4 days or so. Again, this will vary widely based on your conditions and your preferences and like what season it is. Like if it's cold in your house, it's going to make a big difference.
Yep.
Here's the deal. You were trying to build carbonation, right? Which builds pressure. And too much pressure can explode bottles. So make good choices in quality bottles, first and foremost. Secondly, it's a great idea to keep the bottles in a cabinet. That way, if you have an explosion, the mess will be contained. And what I mean by an explosion is that typically the cap will blow and send kombucha everywhere. And this can sound like a gunshot, which rightfully so can be alarming. Like if you're sitting there at 3 a.m. in your bed sleeping...
Right.
That is concerning.
That's the only time you're going to have one blow, for the record.
That's the same time that your fire alarm will start beeping from a low battery. Right. It's a whole situation.
God. And this sounds really scary, but like I've done hundreds of bottles and I've only ever had one blow. And then upon further inspection, it was a faulty, like the cap wasn't situated such.
Oh, okay.
So anyways, it's one of those things like to be aware of. You cannot stick a second ferment in your cabinet and call it good for a month.
No.
It's going to end poorly.
Right. Make good choices.
Right.
So as long as you're attentive, it's highly unlikely, as Stephanie said.
So how do you actually know when it's done, right? Because you got to get it done.
This is going to be fun to edit.
So you want to make sure it's done, but before it explodes.
That's sound advice, Stephanie. Very helpful.
Sorry. Right. Trial and error is pretty much my best advice to you. The advice gets even better. So you're just going to need to experiment with your conditions to see where your sweet spot is. Like at the end of day one, pop a bottle open and check it. And by pop a bottle open and check it, if you pop it and you see bubbles rising, just like a soda. Like
yeah.
Everybody's drank a soda before. That's all we're doing here. If it isn't bubbly enough, then at the end of day two, pop another bottle and check it. Just pop one, right? Because... once you pop the bottle,
it doesn't stop. Once you pop, correct. You can't stop.
Right.
It's Pringles.
We are Looney Tunes on this episode.
It's all I could think of. I'm sorry.
No, I know. We can't stop. So after, you know, there's a chance that you may ruin a couple bottles doing this.
It's fine.
You can still drink it at any point. It just may not be as carbonated as you wanted it to be. I know for me in my house in the summertime, like Tara was saying, it just varies. So in the summertime, I'm looking at like 3 days in my particular cabinet that I keep them in. And then in the wintertime, I typically go to 4 to 5 days. We do run cold here in general.
So yeah.
It's just what Wyoming does. So you will find just after experimenting that you can know when they're done. And then when they are done... right? You want to keep them. So keep them capped and put them in the fridge, and that'll halt your fermentation and keeps your drink exactly where you want it. So that carbonation level will be exactly where you want it until you pop the top. But again, this is no different than soda. If you open that bottle, carbonation is just going to go down from there.
Right.
So drink the one that you use to check first.
Right.
So onto a SCOBY hotel. If you're brewing correctly with a healthy SCOBY, you should start to see more and more growth on your SCOBY. You can use a SCOBY as long as you want to, but at some point it will just become too big. You'll need to split it. So you can share them with a friend or you can look it up. Look up different ways to use a SCOBY because I fed
my chickens before because nobody here wants to make their own. So I fed it to the chicken.
Oh, kombucha. Yeah. Okay. Make their own chicken treats or?
No, kombucha.
What are you talking about?
So I fed a SCOBY to a chickens and they loved it.
Chickens love it. You could dehydrate them and dogs love them.
Yeah.
People will use them in skin bandages, which sounds
that's
insane,
new
but
to
it's
me.
Good bacteria. So.
Oh.
It's like the same concept of people using honey on their wounds too. Yeah. But anyways, I think that there's a whole book. I feel like I've seen a book dedicated to how to use a SCOBY for things other than kombucha. So there's lots of different things out there. Or you can start a SCOBY hotel, which is mostly what I do until the hotel gets out of hand. And then it usually goes to the chickens. But get yourself a large jar, at least a half gallon, I would say. If you have an extra gallon jar, that'd be the best. Place your extra SCOBY in the jar along with some mature starter liquid, 2 to 4 cups, and then some sweet tea, just enough to submerge the SCOBY. So it's almost like you're starting a new batch of kombucha, but this one's just going to be a stopover for your SCOBY. So as time goes along, you're going to notice that the liquid level drops just by being consumed and with evaporation. You're going to want to add more sweet tea at this point to make sure that they stay submerged. And anytime we make kombucha, we usually make a bit extra sweet tea and just dump that in the hotel as well. Just basically your goal is to keep it submerged and fed. So anytime you can just give it a little bit of extra sweet tea, it'll help it. So you want to keep this jar the same as you keep a kombucha jar, room temperature, in the dark, with the loose cover on top, the cloth. And SCOBYs are wildly forgiving. I know that this whole you've got to feed it all the time mentality shied me away from making my own kombucha for a very long time.
Yeah.
Because, your girl's got plenty of mouths to feed.
Right.
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 So you got to do what? I have currently under my sink a SCOBY hotel.
Yes.
That I have not done a single thing to since well before I was pregnant. So last winter.
Yeah.
Last March, maybe at best, was the last time I touched this thing.
You're going to have to show everyone your SCOBY hotel.
I will. And this episode's made me want to get my kombucha going.
Seriously,
again.
Seriously, I'm feeling really drawn to make it again.
Yeah. Do you want a SCOBY?
That's how you get them. You just talk about kombucha and somebody will be like, do you want one? I have plenty.
Do you want one?
Yeah.
Yeah. Seriously. So sometimes you'll read up on the SCOBY hotel situation and you've got to feed it every week and yada, yada, yada. I'm telling you, you don't. They will take some neglect. So, and then
the fermentation world.
Exactly. And if you are already struggling with what am I going to do with all these SCOBYs? The more you take care of it, the more it's going to grow. So
yeah. Yeah.
If you want, you might want to slow it down intentionally. So anyhow, that happens. Basically, make sure it stays covered. If it doesn't stay covered, this is again, ask me how I know, and the top part gets exposed to air, just peel that bad boy off, throw it to one of your animals, and continue on. Most of the time, it will be fine. I've only ever had mold happen once in a kombucha brew, and I obviously had some sort of contamination there. But
yeah.
If you do see mold, use your own discretion. You know what I mean?
Or look at those pictures that they're providing in the book.
Right. Get a book.
Get a book.
Great idea.
This is a great time to buy a book right now.
Yeah. I'm all about buying books in the winter, especially.
Yeah.
And then the nice thing about having a SCOBY hotel, too, is that you can experiment with your SCOBYs. So if you want to try doing some of the herbal infusions, shoot, something happened and that one died. Guess what? I'll just pull another one out of my SCOBY hotel. So it's just kind of a nice backup. And yeah, it gives you something to talk about at cocktail parties.
Yes.
That can be your hospitality gift.
Please do that. That would be hilarious. So, why did you give me dirty raw chicken in liquid?
Flesh colored. Dirty chicken. So in conclusion, the end of this PowerPoint is that this episode's really just a jumping off point. I wrote a solid paragraph of ideas for upcoming episodes. Yes. You haven't even seen those yet.
No.
On our season 3 draft of ideas. Because there's just a lot to go over. There's a lot to talk about, but you know, we got to start somewhere. So keep an eye out for those. If you're ready to take your kombucha further, there's tons more to know, a lot more directions to take it. And if you need help figuring out what those things are to Google or what the next step would be, just ask us. We're happy to get you going in a direction.
For sure.
So cool. We're all about that life.
Well, this has been Milkmaids.
Happy brewing.
Happy brewing.
Bye.
Bye.